In this episode of What the Prophets Say, join me, Emma Stark, once again, Jonah Wilson and Matt Johnson, as we talk about friendships and how to do them. Hello, loyal listeners, and a very warm welcome to another episode of What the Prophets Say with me, Emma Stark. And we are continuing our previous episode with the glory and the beauty and the gift. Is that the right way to describe
yeah,
you guys?
Absolutely.
You're happy with that description? That is Matt Johnson and Jonah Wilson. How are you gentlemen prophets?
Fantastic.
Very well.
Yeah.
Very well.
Do we call prophets gentlemen or do we call them wild warrior prophets?
I mean, you see it all in scripture at this point. Okay. You even see them called seers. And we're going to talk about that in a future episode.
We are men who are seers. We are indeed. Mm. So we're getting ourselves healthy and whole just to
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Chatting away to each other in this podcast that you have a window on that's almost talking therapy for us too.
Seriously.
Prophets are fascinating in that we talk a lot.
Yes, we do.
We actually had to do a staff handbook that has in it office etiquette because every single staff member, I think without exception, is chatty.
Yes. So we actually have it in our code of conduct. If you like to get a little too chatty, take it offline and take it somewhere else.
to go and talk to yourself.
As if that is something that we can actually abide by and live by as prophets.
Go into deep prayer. Talk to God.
I think there's an asterisk next to that that says probably not really, but we want to try.
I don't do other staff handbooks. If you worked in offices, Matt?
Never.
Mm-hmm. Where they say if you're too talkative, that's all of you.
I once worked in an office where it said we were allowed 5 minutes chat per hour. And if it was anything longer than 5 minutes, we were able to get a disciplinary.
I've never been in an office environment that had that.
That was like lockdown, do as you're told.
Wow. Oh,
no. Sorry, what? How would they discipline you for talkativeness?
Not doing your work, I assume. I never talked really, guys. So, I mean, I was so well behaved all the time.
Oh, my days, Matt Johnson.
Yeah.
And just once again, so people can get used to the accent, tell us again where it is, so it's locked in.
It is a Geordie accent from Newcastle in England, the UK.
Northeast.
The northeast of England.
It's a beautiful coast, actually.
It's a beautiful coast.
It's on the coast.
It's got the most beautiful beaches, apparently, in the whole of the UK.
Fuck nonsense.
I mean, it's true, guys. Go there.
No, the North Coast, the North Antrim Coast in Northern Ireland.
Oh, Northern Ireland? No way.
Oh, my goodness.
We all have our preferences and biases. Let's just be real.
There's this, I've heard on this podcast so many times, this stigma of, Ireland is so beautiful. Northern Ireland's so beautiful. And I'm like,
have you been?
What about the? Yes, once. And that was enough, though.
I'm sorry. Where did you go?
In the Giant's Causeway.
And it is gorgeous.
It is beautiful. The Giant's Causeway is beautiful, but it's maybe
a close. But you can't fly to the Giant's Causeway.
No, so you fly to what's it called? The capital, Dublin. And then you drive.
Oh, whoa. Did you just say you fly to the capital of Northern Ireland, Dublin?
No, I said you fly to the capital, meaning the island of Ireland, which is Dublin. And then you drive to Northern Ireland, which is a totally different place for the record. Yeah.
Do you know what? I was so insulted. I nearly put it on my Instagram stories. I was going to title a new kind of Insta post called Insult of the Week and telling people how I was most insulted that week. And then I thought better of it because then I thought it was opening the doors to the misuse of social media and people might attempt to insult me more.
Yeah.
So, but I was so insulted, I nearly began it. And I was standing in the queue at the airport, which seems to be a lot of my world. And I was standing beside an American, a guy from Texas, who was flying from London to Glasgow, as I was. And But for reasons unknown to man, the air conditioning unit didn't work on the plane and they wouldn't let us on because it was a heat hazard because it was in the 80s. Now, to the poor Irish and Scottish who've never lived a day in their life in 80 degree heat, what is that in the other, in Celsius language?
High 30s.
High 30s?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay, would that be hot?
Yeah, because I think 32 is like 80 or 82.
I have no idea what the difference between Celsius and Fahrenheit. Anyway, so, and he's murmuring under his breath about, I live in this, just get on with it. Whereas the sweat is pouring off all of the Scottish in the queue. And so I make conversation with him and we get chatting. And he says this to me, are you from the real Ireland or are you fake Irish from Northern Ireland?
No, he didn't.
And my son, Peter, my 19-year-old, was standing and he's quite mild-mannered. And he just went, oh, no. Oh, no. What have you done?
Oh, my.
And I looked at him straight in the eye and I said, I have no idea whether it was Christian or not. I said, I choose to pour grace on your foolishness because the IRA have blown people up for less than that rudeness. And then the whole conversation shut down. And David appeared with Samuel beside us. And I couldn't even hold it in. I said to David, I have been so insulted so that the Texan could hear, calling me fake Irish.
I know. If anything, not to offend the ones from the South, but they're the ones that rebelled against the crown and separated.
Oh no. Irish history lesson coming in. Oh my. Oh, no, my toes are curling in my shoes. Okay. I promise anybody from the island of Ireland, I will talk Irish history with my staff later. Okay.
This is poor American history for you and how we were taught.
Maybe this is something we could add to the handbook.
The Irish
history.
Do not make comments about North or Southern Ireland. We love them both equally.
Actually, do you know, on my comments on some broadcast that I did, somebody said, I am fed up of Emma calling herself Irish when she's not.
Oh my goodness. And to be fair, our team has Northern and Southern Irish. All of them are here.
I'm kind of like, what are my other options? Yeah. I was born on the island of Ireland and grew up on the island of Ireland. What are my ethnic other alternatives?
Seriously.
Anyway, you provoked that from the beaches.
I can't believe that. I've been landed with, that is your fault.
No blame. Anyway, let's never start insult of the week. Shall
we agree?
Absolutely not.
Agreed.
And we'll just bless the Texan and our lack of understanding.
Yeah, no, I bet he went and Googled afterwards because I'm sure.
To be fair, the only thing we were really taught in history is there was an Irish potato famine and that's really it. We don't get the history. And as I've been here.
Sorry, another insult of the week. Because you said the word potato.
Uh-huh.
Which, of course, are the Irish. Not that I'm their biggest fan, but I'm not allowed to say that. I am sitting having dinner with a Bulgarian in Bulgaria who says to me, I said, what's your greatest food? We in Bulgaria do the best potatoes in the world. I had no idea how to hold my face.
How do you know if you've never left Bulgaria?
Well, but they're Irish. Sorry, moving on.
I mean,
how do we move on from this?
Sorry.
Time for something spiritual, as David says.
Time for something. We need David here. Just a little thing to pop up on the screen of his face with time for something spiritual.
Yeah, seriously.
But I have to say, their tomatoes are great. I'll give the Bulgarians tomatoes.
Yes, there we go.
And that's all they can have.
What's Newcastle famous for, food-wise?
Greggs?
No, Greggs sausage rolls.
Greggs is where Newcastle... It came from Newcastle.
I thought it was Scottish.
No! Oh, my goodness.
We're
what
just bringing
insult.
The insult today. I'm just waiting for my American insult.
I know.
How do we want to insult
of the week?
No, no,
by,
I don't want to insult the Americans. I think we've got an award for that.
So Greg's, or have you had a savloy dip?
A what?
A savloy dip.
Spell savloy.
I am rubbish at spelling. I will try.
No, I'm dyslexic.
S-A-V-L-O-Y. It's like a sausage, which is red.
What?
It has a red skin.
I'm Googling.
A very, very northern thing I found out. So moving to Scotland, I thought, definitely we'll have savloy dip. Or peace pudding.
I've never heard of peace pudding.
What?
What's peace pudding?
Oh, peace pudding is fantastic.
I'm Googling
ham. It. Have you heard of peace pudding, Emma?
Yes. S-A-V-E-L-O-Y. Looks like it's spelled save loy, but you're pronouncing it savloy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a type of highly seasoned sausage.
Beautiful.
Usually bright red, normally boiled, mm-hmm. and available in fish and chip shops.
Mm-hmm. But you would have a savloy dip, which is in a starchy bun, which is only available in the north of England.
Like a bread roll.
And it's a big bread roll. It's a big round bread roll. It has a layer of stuffing, then peace pudding, then hot savloys with gravy, and then mustard on top. Bang. The best sandwich.
It sounds like good comfort food.
It does sound like good comfort food.
Yeah.
Odd.
Odd.
But comfort food.
We all have odd things. I have my skyline dip from Cincinnati. So.
Skyline dip?
Yes.
What is a skyline
this
dip?
This is like a cookery. Yeah. Office do cookery.
So Cincinnati, I've talked about this on other Power Hours. If you've watched Power Hour, I've talked about this. I have to be mindful. So before I get into my story.
I'm so sorry. I've just read that savloy sausages are made with pork brain.
Oh.
Surely it means pig brain.
I'm assuming it means pig brain. Is it actually? That's why
literally
it
says traditionally pork brain.
Don't tell my wife. She would never let me eat one.
In
beef
collagen casing, none of this is sounding appetizing.
To be fair, the Scots have haggis, and it's
if you actually well, it's a specialist animal that only has three legs.
Yeah.
Right, keep going.
Yeah, so my skyline dip. So Cincinnati has Cincinnati style chili. It's actually Greek, is what it is. It's a Greek influence. So it's mincemeat, but it's like really finely pureed with different spices. So you've got like chocolate, you've got nutmeg.
Sorry,
you've got,
chocolate is not a spice.
Sorry, I realized that. So you've got the chocolate with the spices. You've got like the nutmeg and the cinnamon and different flavors. So it's really thin. Normally you put that skyline chili on spaghetti and it almost becomes like a bolognese with cheese on top.
A what?
Now you're just going to get on my American accent.
You mean a bolognese?
Bolognese.
Because we're all Italian.
Yes, 100%.
Absolutely.
So skyline dip, though, is you take the skyline chili and you do cream cheese on the bottom.
Oh, no.
Then you do the chili and then you do cheese and you eat it with nachos. And it's a very big thing that you do during the Super Bowl while you're watching football, American football.
Look at our faces. Mm-hmm.
But to be fair, your little something or another dip, salonaise, does not sound appetizing to me.
You mean savloy.
Savlon. Oh no, savlon is a antiseptic cream.
Yes, that's what you do if you fall over and got a grazed knee, put a bit of savlon in it.
We're literally listeners. If you've lasted this far,
well,
congratulations. A prize is winging its way to you. Okay, of a tin of chili.
Seriously.
Yeah. Okay. So last time we were talking about this concept of being content from Philippians 4. And I wonder, Matt, if you can pull it up. I've now got pictures of Northeast sausages on my phone. So Philippians 4 verses 10 to 13. And it's pushing into this quite difficult concept of the learning and the testing of God that he puts into our lives, the uncomfortableness at the hand of God because of his level of intense, passionate jealousy that he so wants us to throw ourselves, to yield ourselves, to bend. I would want to use the word a running hurling of ourselves into depths of intimacy and fusion and yieldedness with the divine and this deep connection with God that he will not let us settle in any sense of our own self being provider or savior or getting too comfortable either in poverty or in great overwhelms of riches, if it is a detractor from a sense of a dependency on him, because of his yearning, passionate desire for us, that he lives in desire and he lives in yearning. He's never dulled down. He's never tepid in his level of passionate desire. And so this is how he leads us to keep that high.
I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I am not saying this is because I am in need, for I've learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in every season and situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all this through him who gives me strength.
So guys, let me frame this slightly differently, because we talked a lot about business and entrepreneurial and corporate worlds that you guys had lived in. I'm going to frame it in terms of the entirety of Philippians 4. The whole chapter is titled about steadfastness and unity. In other words, it's a scripture that is addressing broken relationships. And it starts actually with a plea in verse 2, a very interesting and very blunt direction of travel from the Apostle Paul writing to the church in Philippi. And he's pleading with Euodia, which is an interesting New Testament name, and Syntyche is, we believe, how the next name is pronounced, probably not our best pronunciation, but Euodia and Syntyche. He's pleading with them to be of one mind in the Lord. And then he also mentions Clement, three interesting names there, who are clearly not getting along very well. And he then goes into a command of reminding us to bring gentleness forward in us. Yeah. Let your gentleness be evident to all. But the gentleness being evident to all is clearly in the context of three of them who've had a breakdown in their relationships. And he talks about not being anxious, but about the peace of God transcending all understanding and guarding our hearts and minds. So he's blessing a wellness in them in the midst of broken relationships. Mm-hmm. He's blessing them into peace and the mind of Christ when things have clearly been quite betrayal orientated and quite fragmented. Very important. And then the great command of Philippians 4 verse 8, whatever is noble, whatever is pure, what's right, what's lovely, what's admirable, praiseworthy, think on such things. So he's training the mental ascent, mental agility to jump some hoops, to come into the place where it doesn't focus on your offense, but it focuses on what is praiseworthy, clearly with interrelational dynamic. It's a fascinating, because we think of like that is it, well, there's lust or there's pornography or there's something impure, but actually very much the whatever is admirable, excellent, and praiseworthy is set within relational betrayal context within Philippians 4. So it is, I think, quite right when Paul then says, I rejoice greatly in the Lord, verse 10, which is what you read, that you renewed your concern for me. I wonder how angsty that is spoken. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you renewed your concern for me. In other words, it's perfectly plausible here that there had been some sense of falling out, but you hadn't shown it, is how he goes on. I'm not saying this because I'm in need, but I've learned to be content. In other words, not only is the learning in scripture to be content in much and in little, but the learning is in scripture to be content in broken relationships. It is a learning of your own wholeness before the Lord in betrayal. And then Paul clearly adds the financial bank balance aspect to it. I think if we just take the scripture as a bank balance only issue, we miss the rest of the build up, the crescendo of the chapter, that actually I am to learn a settledness of spirit when relationships don't work out, when they are storming, when I'm annoyed. Now, it's not clear here whether there's full-blown breakdown, but clearly they're back in some kind of communication, the church in Philippi and Paul, so it's not complete estrangement. Let's comment on that and the journey to learn the navigation of our own hearts in betrayal.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I've talked about this, I think it was either in a prior What the Prophets Say or it was in A War Rooms, I'm trying to remember. But I was talking about in our Raising Prophets program in year one, one of the things that you have us do is you have us write a letter to someone who has harmed you, specifically a church leader who's harmed you, that you are no longer most likely connected to, and you actually have to prophesy over them. And I remember going through that process, and then I not only did I write the prophecy and actually what's the call on their life, and but then the Lord said, not only do I want you to deliver that word while I was in the airport in Glasgow, he's like, I want you to buy that Starbucks mug because you know that that person likes to collect Starbucks mugs, and I want you to go in 2 weeks' time. I want you to visit them, have coffee with them, hand them the mug, and give them the word of the Lord. And there is something in that, though. And I think as I've pushed in, you know, have your time of pain, process with the Lord, have your trusted circle where you're like, this person, like Paul, we see it in Timothy, this person, this blacksmith greatly wounded me, and I'm going to let you know. And also the tension is not just that, and the Lord's with you in your pain. There is the, but then now I'm going to continue to choose in the pain, I'm going to prophesy over your life. In the pain, I'm going to bless you. In the pain, I'm going to lay hands over you, and I'm going to break things. Even if I see it, even if you've come at me, I'm now going to come in the opposing spirit and even still assume the best and choose to partner with God's call over you, God's partnership over you. And you just, you have to push into that. There's no other way, I feel like. I feel like when I've chose the opposite of that spirit, you're only left with pain and suffering. You're not actually able to come out on the other side
for,
of it.
For me, it's the interesting push of the Apostle Paul here. You must not look for vengeance, retribution, justice, but actually your portion is to learn to focus on the praiseworthy and the admirable. And you must learn the contentment in the ebb and flow of relationships. And that is difficult because we sit in offense, kind of the buzzword of the I don't know, the year. But we sit very easily in, I want justice, I want retribution, I'm offended. But the Lord is actually asking you to find what it is to learn contentment when relationships don't always work out the way you want them to. That's a fascinating challenge.
Yeah, and it, I think it is, it's all a character thing, isn't it? You know, and is the Apostle Paul actually saying to the church, what has your character been in this previous season? What, and then almost a call immediately, quite quickly, to this is what your character should be, and I'm not going to mince my words. I'm going to tell you what you need to know, because that is actually love. And you need relationships with people like that, where you can get around and they can be in your closer circle, where they can say, hey, you know what? This actually did hurt. This offended me when you did this. Can we have a conversation? And then they blow that up. And what does that look like? That looks like, does your character sit well with that? Or do you completely crumble under the pressure of someone questioning your thought processes or your actions?
Do you choose to focus on what is admirable and what is praiseworthy in that situation? It's a very, very high bar. When somebody is pushing you. Now, I think because there is clearly in scripture not estrangement, and the sense that the Philippians are reaching back out to Paul and Paul to them, and clearly Euodia and Syntyche, if I got it right, the two mentioned there, he's pleading with them to be of the one mind, clearly in some sort of connection. I wonder whether this is more what Paul is saying here, is not the relationships where you have to set boundaries and there are those for absolute safety, because there are some relationships that are toxic and dangerous, but that we are too quick to walk away and too slow to go, I actually need a little bit of the rough and tumble that pushes me here so that I might learn the art of sitting in whatever is praiseworthy, whatever is admirable, that I am to think about these things. And Paul says, whatever you've learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put it into practice. Put this ability to let love cover a multitude of sins and the rough and tumble of community life, that you don't walk away too quickly because you've not learnt this art in community.
Yeah. And I think we see that so often, or I've certainly seen it in church, where someone will maybe be there for a year and then they'll hit a season of offence and they'll go, right, that's me ejecting. And then they have a repeated pattern again and again and again. And you often have conversations with those people where they're then going, you know, it feels like it's almost always me, and it's the victim mentality, obviously.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a character lesson that the Lord is trying to bring about again and again, so we can grow and be and be stronger in relationships, so we can steward good relationships. I think often we find and we sit in the, or what can I get from a relationship?
Yeah.
And we very rarely sit in the, how can I give something into a relationship? And what does that actually look like? And I know we've had many conversations about where you find some people where some people are wells and some people are drains. And
I love that terminology.
Because
you
find, oh, I'm around these guys and I'm filled up. And then you hit some people and you go, I am completely empty. And it's the wisdom and the maturity that comes with doing relationship that you can go, oh, okay. I know when I will say, give my yes to the people that are drains, because it's important, I think, to push into people that are like that and help grow their character and put life into them, because, you know, that's, is that what Paul is hitting on with his example?
Yeah.
So, how do we then take that thought and, you know, push life into people? I don't know if that.
Absolutely, because Paul is learning here. I think when he says to be content in whatever circumstances, I'm learning the art of the journey of relationships that do form and storm and norm and push and give and take. And I'm content in that. In other words, I'm not a high demanding diva, I think is what he's saying there. I've learned that sometimes I will give and sometimes I will receive. And I'm content in the rhythm of all sorts of natures of relationships here. But as long as there is this determination collectively to focus on what is noble, admirable, praiseworthy, and excellent.
Yeah. I mean, I think to your point, and I love the language of the wells and the drains. I think in that we can't give from an empty cup. So it's at the end of the day, do find those people that are filling you up, pouring in, but you're not being poured in so that you can go and retreat to a cave and say, woe is me. But it is okay. You know, I've sat with you, Matt. You've told me how much you're valued and appreciated. I want to remind you of that. Okay, now I'm going to take that and I'm going to go, and I am going to storm, and I am going to go to the hard to reach soil, and I'm going to push in, and I'm going to give. But at the same time, don't give from an empty cup. There is that sense of who are, and you have to find that in your life. Who are the individuals that are your errands and your hers that are lifting you up in times of need? But it's the reality, like you just said, you're never going to be in a place where it's 50-50 or it's equal, mm-hmm. or I give this much, you give this much. There's going to be seasons where I'm sure there's been seasons for you, Emma, mm-hmm. where you're like, you know what? I just literally, I can't give out right now. All I need is I need people to pour into me. Because mm-hmm. I know I've been in that season where yeah. it's like, but then you hope, and the other side, on the flip side of that, when someone else is going through a similar circumstance, you're now able to pour out and push them.
I want to really pull it down into friendship rescue mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. rather than the high drama days of very obvious, significant fallout. Mm-hmm. And I want to give advice from this verse about the ordinary and the everyday, mm-hmm. where we are not those who easily apply the turn the other cheek, find the praiseworthy, cover with love mm-hmm. in the very entry level. And before we know it, we're in cataclysmic breakdown of relationship. And so what I want to ask you guys, although I'm sorry, we have chatted a little bit about it, but I want to put you a bit on the spot. Matt, you've told the listeners before that you came out of a business, you'd birthed a business 5 years ago in that entrepreneurial way, but actually quite work from home. Most of it was work from yeah. home. And Jonah, I think your last job was majoritively work from home, mm-hmm. It, obviously in different nations. What is it like coming into a very high-paced office environment, Christian ministry office environment? And I would use the word office about anything here because it's not standard in that regard. But it is a lot of extroverts. It's a lot of speed. It's a lot of high opinionated people everywhere. Mm-hmm. The kindly, but there's no doubt that you get what people think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the learning in that, and how, what do we need to know? What's helpful for us to know about mm-hmm. even as you tell your stories, in the sense that Paul is pushing a lifestyle of contentment and praiseworthy. In clearly some folk who have, he actually describes these two characters, hang on, as working at his side, they're both ladies, help these women since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers whose names are in the book of life. I'm reading Philippians 4 verse 3. And so there's a sense of physical proximity,
yes,
mm-hmm. in this, and yet the sense of not being able to find the same mind. Mm-hmm. So they're clearly together for the work of the kingdom, but strained and not quite with the same destination aim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me coming in, because I don't know about you, you've worked in an office environment too,
yes,
right?
Yes, yep.
But for me, it's been about 5 years of work remote. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was in an office almost 10 years in different environments, sales, marketing, customer service, mm-hmm. back to sales, all of the different, the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. So having to even work across different departments and things mm-hmm. like that, and influencing without authority. And I don't have the authority to say this, but how do I get yeah. you to? But then it's totally different when you come back into an environment, also mm-hmm. different culture. Mm-hmm. So there's the way, even though we're English, we all share the same language, mm-hmm. our cultures are different.
Totally.
But I think one of the things that you say just in general is like, we can't be everything to everyone.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think as I've come in, one of the first advices that I was given to multiple people is, don't make GPA your everything. Find mm-hmm. hobbies, find things outside, mm-hmm. find friends outside. And I think it's so important, even in the midst of family, even in the mm-hmm. midst, like family has different things that we like to do. And there's yeah. things that you do even outside of family. Like I know Peter used to swim. I was a swimmer. So it's finding that rhythm yeah. Yeah. of what are the things outside of even GPA that feed in, that feed life, so that when I come into this space, mm-hmm. into a high energy environment, I'm actually giving from a full tank. And that not just you as family and as team are getting that, but then also as we're on broadcasts, as we are doing prophetic checkups, as we're leading others, how are you leading from a full tank? And how are you working from a place of rest? And I was talking with a friend last night about this, about Sabbath, I think we misconstrue the idea even of a Sabbath mm-hmm. in a day of rest or I need this. Mm-hmm. But the reality that God was really pushing with the concept of Sabbath mm-hmm. is how are you being spirit-led, spirit-filled, living from a lifestyle of rest? That's how you're actually able to then prophesy with accuracy.
So you're less button pressed
yes.
in the rough and tumble of relationships.
Absolutely.
That is a massive mm-hmm. learn. If mm-hmm. if you only come to your family, your church connections exhausted, you're just never going to be able to live in it. Let me pick up on something you said as we come back to you, Matt. Because David and I, as you know, do an awful lot of pre-marriage or relational guidance stuff over the years, I have... I'm in the sweet place. I have the joy of a number of people around me at the moment who are in the forming of covenant and about to get engaged. So I had to write some of my best thoughts down because some of them are remote from me geographically mm-hmm. into before you get engaged, here is my list of mm-hmm. things that I must see happen in your life.
Yeah.
So I ended up sending it to a number of people more than I had anticipated because anyway, now everybody's going to want to know the list. It's quite a long set of text messages.
It's a good list, though.
Oh, okay. You've read it.
Yes.
I wasn't going to allude to that, but you've now, like, you know, outed yourself.
Yes.
You've read it. But one of those points is you are not the same person. Mm-hmm. Of course, eventually in covenant, you become one flesh, but you are never the same person. It's like the triune Godhead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are one. The Lord our God is one, but they are separate.
Yeah.
So it is in covenant. And so whatever the covenant is, whether it's a church or a friendship or a marriage, you're not the same person. And therefore, in that, you have to know what brings you life.
Yes.
That when you come into that dynamic of relationships, there is a sense of I have rested, I have leisured, I have, you know, decompressed, whatever it is. And I find that particularly in very intense groups or intense marriage, well, all marriages are by nature framed as very bonded. If you don't have anything to bring to the table of conversation that sharpens, mm-hmm. it actually is quite destructive.
Yeah.
I read this. I listened to this. Even if it's as little as that, what do you think about this thing that I heard by myself mm-hmm. that I am bringing mm-hmm. in to nurture this mm-hmm. dynamic? And so that becomes very important because you can get very weirdly exclusive,
yeah.
particularly in this kind of dating phase. And good covenant is actually very diverse. I believe
absolutely.
In that it understands how to learn curiously and ask questions and discover so that you never become elite as a group or a congregation mm-hmm. or a marriage. And so if we're going to do what Paul is saying here of mm-hmm. praiseworthy and admirable, there is living adventurously broad, mm-hmm. healthy lives that enable us to give and to bring the best from each other.
Mm-hmm. And people need people as well.
Yes.
So obviously you're talking about covenant and the very close covenant of marriage.
Yes.
But for me, I've had 5 years of isolation working from home mm-hmm. and I honestly didn't think that people needed people so much. So
oh, did you?
No. It's so coming into this environment where we are a million miles an hour and we are all extroverts and we all have crazy ideas
with
big personalities, it's so challenging, but it's absolutely beautiful
mm-hmm.
and I actually wonder if the Lord has got his hand on the work from home, do I say movement, because that's only really been so much of a thing from COVID.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if actually there needs to be a realignment where we need to look and go, people need people. We're mm-hmm. not meant to be islands. We're not meant to be alone. And mm-hmm. have we set up a culture where it is mm-hmm. more convenient rather than helpful? Because if we isolate ourselves from people and the only point of contact is Have you finished this task from my infrastructure days? Have you finished this task? Is this issue resolved? Yes, it is. Great, thanks. And that was the conversation, where we could be in the office and we could be having coffee because we're around about each other. Yeah. Where I'm going, oh, Jonah, how was your day? Emma, how was the kids? That sort of relational content,
right,
which we don't get behind a screen. And I wonder if actually there's a reordering that the Lord is bringing, where we need to step out of our homes and make the workspace more of an environment where we get to sit, dwell, chat with each other, push and do life with each other. And then going back to the, some people are wells and some people are drains.
Yeah.
People choose your people, but don't isolate yourself into the place of it's just me, myself and I. And Jesus, because that, as Christians, do we not all do that? Oh, me and Jesus.
We're actually pushing here, I think, the need for a certain sort of community, but a praiseworthy, admirable community based on this Philippians 4 concept. I think my add to it, interestingly, because we record so many of these, you always get our fresh examples. Yeah. Yesterday, Sam Robertson and I were sitting together. We spent most of the day together yesterday. He's actually a really brilliant HR thinker.
Yeah.
And he runs the HR in the office. And we were redesigning, he and I, the kind of monthly personal development plans. I don't know, what do they call them in other offices?
Yeah, I mean, personal development or
KPI, key performance indicators.
Last one I was entrepreneur operating system with rocks and 90-day plans.
Oh my goodness, what the heck is all of that? Anyway, and yeah. we've used various incarnations of them over the years, and we sat together looking at developing a new one, you know, because everybody, my heart in it is this, how do I create a framework where somebody gets celebrated once a month? The aim is for me is celebration. How do you, because people need to hear celebration about themselves once a month. I think if you don't hear celebration about yourself once a month, it's very difficult to be sustained. Anyway, that aside, Sam brought this interesting thought. He said, do you remember, Emma, probably two offices ago, he said, you and David designed this form where the first half of the conversation was very deeply personal questions. Now, we had sort of moved away from that because in the workplace, you don't want to overstep the mark. And I can't remember exact, Sam's a way to find the paperwork, but we were kind of reminiscing together beyond the how are you and what is going well for you personally and where do you need personal, emotional, relational support and what would you like me to pray for you for the next 4 weeks before we meet again? And a whole set, I mean, that takes ages sometimes. And almost that the performance in the job is very much separate, and but deeply, deeply invasive. And as Sam and I sat in that trying to figure out how we redesign this for the office in this next epoch of time, the sense of when did somebody last sit with you in a regular way and actually ask you those sort of deep questions where you feel seen, even if it's a little bit constructed, even if it is noted and written and then reported on, and the preference for that over non-visibility and the preference to construct community in a place where those things are asked. Now, I know most workplaces don't have the opportunity and it would be seen as invasive in many workplaces. But if your work can't construct that, certainly your family or your home group or your church or your friendship group should be putting those kind of questions in so that there is the opportunity to be asked and the opportunity to be heard. You could answer it any which way you want.
Yeah,
I mean, you can actually say this month, I don't feel like I want to share that. And that's an okay thing. But we've lost that sense of what do I pray? And are you sleeping? And how is your heart? And how are you physically? And what do you need to be heard on right here mm-hmm. and right now? Mm-hmm. And here is this opportunity that you might bring who you are mm-hmm. to us, that we might know even how to celebrate the milestones mm-hmm. of your personality as it shaped and grows, yeah. rather than just did you perform?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think because yeah. also, and this, I love how this interlaces with relationships. Mm-hmm. My mind goes to love languages with this conversation.
Yeah.
So then in an office environment, we all receive love in different ways. We mm-hmm. receive value, appreciation in different ways. Mm-hmm. So then it's that deeply personal question of like, hey, Matt, how, if I wanted to honor you, if I wanted to celebrate your achievement, what would best celebrate you? Is it a word of affirmation? Is it a Slack message? Or do I need
No, can we just say no?
No, not to Slack.
Not on Slack.
But to some people, they just love to be cheered on, you know, and you would never yeah. know that. They're like, I don't need anything.
Are you telling us that you want to be celebrated on Slack?
No, mine are definitely quality time. So I love...
And gifts. Jonah is known as Cups in the office. So we buy you another cup, Jonah.
Fair enough. Yes, that is my nickname in the office is Cups. I just get handed cups on my desk. I don't know how it happens. you know, if someone is gifts, if someone's gifts in the office, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. You know, let's just say with Sam, you did such a great job, not just putting together an office environment, but really making it feel like our space.
Oh, so then, I mean, how he has interior designed
the interior
space
design. So then it's like, okay, I want to do more than just celebrate you on a Slack message. I know mm-hmm. for you, it's probably gifts. So is it a gift card to your favorite restaurant? Is it your favorite coffee? What is the thing that is actually going to really tick that box and say, I see you, I know you, I value you for what you bring to the table? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think leaning into that that whole concept of being seen and known is something that we need to try and do more. It's okay to have a surface level, which is the, hey, how are you? But what we're alluding to is delving deeper into the, hey, I do see you, I do know you. And that is relationship is sacrifice ultimately.
Yeah.
And love is sacrifice. So what does loving someone truly like Jesus look mm-hmm. like? Because if what was Jesus, you know, the greatest example of his love was he sacrificed himself for us.
Yes.
How do we then replicate, maybe not exactly the same, but replicate in a way where we can fiercely love each other, and we have that option to let me war for you in the time when you need war. And I'm okay sharing this. So yesterday we all gathered around me and another member of the team, and there was just for an illness thing. And just it was a let's war together, let's love well. And what does that look like? Let's lay on hands. Let's take time out of our day, because it's not ultimately all about work, but it is about relationships, fighting for each other.
As
our time comes to an end, I know we've talked a lot about our personal examples, and our personal examples are clearly because we work together and we lived in proximity, and we're in a very unusual place. I know it is a privileged place. Like, if you want to move to Scotland, we have bandwidth for you to join in here. There are no closed doors here in that regard. But take the medicine or the lessons of what we're pushing into in Philippians 4, of a construction of a culture around you that you get to do, that you get to lead in, that you get to say who comes into the house and how that looks, how that might look within the home group or whatever it is that you particularly have as a metron of impact and influence. But let's go back to finish where I hope we started, apart from the insults about the Irish, in the Philippians 4 concept of the pleading. And I think we would want to plead with you as Paul pleads in Philippians 4, verse 2. I plead with you, ladies, to be of the same mind. In other words, don't let little things kick you out. Mm-hmm. We've all lost relationships because we let it slide and we almost left it to the unfixable. But as much as it is in your power, quoting more of Paul's scriptures, to urge ourselves to come into a place of one-mindedness and to rejoice, to let gentleness be evident, to present our prayers, petitioning for each other, to let the peace of God come into our relationships and to come into the excellent and the praiseworthy, that we might learn to be content even when God allows a sharpening relationship, which you actually really need. Mm-hmm. And to start to build what I think is going to be utterly vital in the days of war. Mm-hmm. In the days of economic downturn, is to retrain ourselves almost in those entry levels of how I begin to steward my relationships and to set actually what might look like diarized or maybe over prescribed times, but worth doing. Look, I'm going to tell you this. When intimacy in a relationship, I'm going to talk about marriage, people come to me and, you know, relationships have gone off the boil. One of the first pieces of advice I give is put it in the diary. Oh, it doesn't seem organic. Oh, it doesn't seem spontaneous. No, because you've lost that art. If you've lost that art of knowing how to do things well that are intimate, seriously, look at me right now. If you have lost the art of knowing how to do relationships well, if intimacy is far from you, if the spontaneous glee of a yesteryear seems to have flown away, you need to diarize across many levels of how relationships work. Hold yourself to putting it in the diary and diarize even conversations or physical intimacy or question asking. Set the list of questions and put it on paper and don't miss it, that you might be retrained in many ways of what it is to find out about somebody that you might come back to the praiseworthy in them. So thank you for joining us for this episode of What the Prophets Say. It's been our joy to hang out with you. I've been Emma Stark. You've been
Jonah Wilson
and
Matt Johnson.
We'll see you again very soon, my friends. Hello, friends. I've got something exciting to share with you. If you want to reach out and grab hold of our hands so that we can take you to the next level, you need to download our Par TV app today. Go to partv.app and we have there exclusively podcast Par resources that run alongside the podcast for more activation of the power of God in your life. Make sure that you've not missed this opportunity to dive deeper on the partv.app.